Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, Sir Elton John had to respond to American Right to Life, so did Hillary Clinton, because American Right to Life filed a complaint with the FEC that Elton John, who's a foreigner, he's not a U.S. citizen, he was raising money, remember that, for Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign? And that's against the rules, so American Right to Life today forwarded to us here at Bob Inyart Live, respondent, Hillary Clinton. Respondent, Sir Elton John. Good job, American Right to Life. Of course, they're not going to get in trouble, and they broke the law, of course, but that's par for the course. In a few minutes, we'll have a surprise interview, one of the great men in the country. But first, have you noticed the news? A Los Angeles clinic, the Fertility Institute, not only offers sex selection, meaning if the parents want a girl, the clinic doctor kills off the sons. And if the parents want a boy, the clinic kills the daughters. Well, not only do they offer sex selection, but now Matt Drudge reports today that they've begun offering eye color and hair color selection for children. Now, this is a destructive practice, of course, and it reminds us of the German eugenics program, attempting to produce designer Aryan babies. Reminds me of Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, who was supportive of the Nazis by commissioning a Third Reich eugenist to write for her Planned Parenthood newsletter. Now, this L.A. clinic, they've taken down their webpage, I'm sure only temporarily, but the webpage that announced the hair and eye color selection. So that made big news today, and they took it down off their website. But I used Google caching, and I was able to get the page, even though they took it down. And it turns out that eye and hair color selection means, of course, in the case where the parents want blonde-haired, blue-eyed children. Oh, and by the way, this clinic, they have so many patients from Europe and abroad that they've arranged deep discount transportation and lodging through their partner travel agency. And so when the parents want blue-eyed, blonde kids, the clinic doctors will kill off any boys or girls that have dark complexion. Oh, yes, and by the way, they also offer screening for dark skin versus light skin. Now, they've been doing gender selection for a few years, where they kill off the unwanted daughters, for example, if a son is wanted. Now, that's a crime against humanity. But more so, it's a crime against their daughter, who mom and dad has brought into the world and then killed. And if they want a girl, it's a crime against their son. Now, sons, to have a son, sons are simply the greatest. Sons are the best. The greatest possible child conceivable, except for daughters, of course. Last night, I was at a Boy Scout meeting with my 11-year-old son, Zachary. And for some years now, our family has participated in a strong Christian Cub Scout pack. And on Friday night, my son, Zachary, graduated at what they call, they call it a blue and gold banquet. And he was presented with his Arrow of Light Award. And that's cool. It's an actual arrow made by his parents. And Zach crossed over from Cub Scouts to Boy Scouts before a couple hundred people, along with his fellow den members. And he walked over a bridge. And on the other side of the bridge, he was welcomed by the Boy Scouts, who gave him his new neckerchief. And these older scouts are already now working with Zachary, my son, for him to qualify for what's called the tenderfoot rank. Oh, by the way, Girl Scouts, they support lesbians. So please don't let your daughter become a Girl Scout. Now, the Boy Scouts, They're solid. That's why the homosexuals oppose the Boy Scouts of America. So Boy Scouts, good. Girl Scouts, bad. And besides, don't they sell those cookies? Or are they made with real Girl Scouts? Okay, so at any rate, I understand that some families want boys. I get that. Cheryl and I have seven. And two of our other boys are scouts also, the younger ones. One, he's in a den that's called a tiger level, and the other's a wolf. And the entire experience is exhilarating. I've gone camping with Zachary on a couple father-son camping weekends. One of those weekends was called a Weebelows weekend. We be loyal scouts for the kids before they become Boy Scouts. A Weebelows weekend. And now listen to this. There were hundreds, a couple hundred sons and dads, and some moms too. And that whole weekend event was run for the younger scouts by the older Boy Scouts. And the senior patrol leader who was in charge of the whole thing, he was a 14-year-old kid. 14-year-old kid in charge of 200 people camping out for a weekend. And by the way, I'll tell you his name. His name is Weston Craddock, senior patrol leader, member of Denver Bible Church. And he led a couple hundred campers, ran the whole program. And that's how the scouts operate. They teach boys how to be leaders. As the PAC chaplain, we have two goals: to build character in the boys and to teach them leadership. Those are the two goals. Build character, teach leadership. So you don't have to tell me how great it is to have a son. I get it. In fact, in Colorado, there is a sign at a scout camp that reads, "A boy is the only creature from which God makes a man." A boy is the only creature from which God makes a man. Wow. That's powerful. And to realize the great honor and duty that God grants us to raise a boy into a godly young man. And a son is the greatest possible gift a Christian parent can receive from God. Except, of course, for a daughter. And a daughter is the greatest possible gift. Except for a son. But it is a crime against your own child to kill her because you want a boy. That is rebellion against God. Sometimes it's done with a degree of ignorance, but always done with great selfishness. So the Los Angeles Fertility Institutes, they now offer not only sex selection, meaning if the parents want a boy, the clinic doctor kills off the daughter, but they've also begun to screen children for the right eye color and the right hair color. And where is the body of Christ? You know the author Francis Schaeffer? He wrote about 25 books. His son, I think, is off the reservation, Frankie Schaeffer. But Francis Schaeffer, a hero who warned the body of Christ, where their moral relativism was bringing them. I've got one of his books here, The Great Evangelical Disaster. And this was published in 1984. I want to read you the first two sentences from the back of the book. First two sentences. And ask yourself, boy, where have I heard that before? First two sentences from Francis Schaeffer, who said this is perhaps his most important book. He's one of the, top three or four Christian thinkers of the 20th century. He writes this: "Have Christians compromised their stand on truth and morality until there is almost nothing they will speak out against?" What does that sound like? Sounds like Brian Rohrbaugh. Sounds like American Right to Life. Sounds like what we do here at Bob and Yurt Live. That's the first sentence on the back of The Great Evangelical Disaster. And this was written before Ted Haggard even became the head of the NEA, the National Evangelical Association. Have Christians compromised their stand on truth and morality until there is almost nothing they will speak out against? Has the evangelical church itself sold out to the world? And that has been the cry of Bob and Yurt Live for 18 years now on the air. For 18 years. And Francis Schaeffer starts out saying that we need to take our Christianity into every sphere of human endeavor, including the civil needs of the law and the government. Of course, Christians say, oh, politicians, that has nothing to do with the body of Christ. That has nothing to do with Christianity. Well, how about a singer? How about a filmmaker? How about a plumber? Should a plumber honor God in what he does? Or plumbing doesn't count? How about a cook? You go into a restaurant. You want the cook to be somebody who loves his neighbor or somebody who hates his neighbor and spits in the food? I mean, everyone should honor God. Everyone, including, of course, the governing officials. Why would God give a pass to the governing officials? Why would Christian leaders not love the mayor and say, oh, I'm a minister. I don't care if the governor is on his way to hell and mocks God with everything he does. Why would I care about that? I'm a Christian. Do you see the hypocrisy? There's a fundamental hypocrisy there. And Francis Schaeffer warned the body of Christ about this in 1984. I would urge you guys to not give up, not grow faint, not grow weary. Francis Schaeffer says that the goal is to help evangelical Christians see how much of the evangelical world has been compromising and has been accommodating. They are accommodating to the destructive and ugly spirit of our day. And he says, I want to help Christian radicals stand courageously against this compromise. Isn't that cool? Where do you hear that from? I mean, Billy Graham writes in his Christian Workers Handbook that we Christians should support abortion for rape, incest, if the baby is handicapped. And Christian leaders need to return to their determination to be proud of God and his word and not hide God in the closet like has become so common. And one of my heroes, because as a governing official, as a justice, in fact, the chief justice of a state Supreme Court, Judge Roy Moore, had the Ten Commandments in their courthouse building. And when those who are in rebellion against God said, get rid of the Ten Commandments, Judge Roy Moore, in fact, is he with us here at Bob and Yurt Live? Judge Roy Moore, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Nice to be with you, Bob.
Thanks for coming back, Judge. Could we remind the audience before we get to a couple questions I have for you? But, Judge, you were determined to honor God by keeping the Ten Commandments in the lobby of the courthouse.
Yes, I intended to acknowledge the God upon whom the nation is founded and where our rights and liberties come from. It's a very legal thing as well as a matter of faith.
Right, where our rights and liberties come from. And so you were ordered to remove the Ten Commandments plaque from the lobby of the courthouse, is that right?
I was given an unlawful order by a federal district judge that said acknowledging God was improper, and yet all the courts and everybody in the country does it. So
I'm confused. I thought the U.S. Supreme Court, I thought they had the Ten Commandments engraved in stone in that building somewhere.
They have Moses holding a plaque, Ten Commandments, on the east portico, and over the Chief Justice's head is a plaque with Roman numerals 1 through 10, which they now call the Bill of Rights, but in the late 50s and 60s, it was referred to as the Ten Commandments by the court.
Well, certainly when they show Moses holding the tablets of stone, they're not saying that the Bill of Rights was engraved on those.
No.
No, of course not. So, Judge Roy Moore, you showed courage because so many of our Christian leaders have accommodated the world. And I've just been going through for a second time Francis Schaeffer's book, The Great Evangelical Disaster. And this was back in 1984. And he was begging men of God, men and women of God, to not compromise, not accommodate the spirit of the world, but honor Christ and stand courageously. And so thanks for what you've done. And that's a part of our history. But now I'd like to talk about today and the future. Judge, these rumors are swirling that you're interested, that you're considering running for governor in Alabama. Is this true? Are these rumors true? We got excited, and that's why we called you.
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, the press has asked me, and I said I was strongly considering it, but I have not made the announcement yet, but I expect to sometime in May.
All right. Well, that's real encouraging, and we here at Bob and Yurt Live, we just had a telethon. I think we had people donate in February from 30 different states, even though we're only on the air in Colorado, but this is the most powerful Christian radio station in the country. So, Judge, if you run, we want to let our audience know that Judge Roy Moore is running for governor of Alabama. Boy, would that be thrilling.
Well, thank you very much, and I surely will let you know, Bob.
All right. And, Judge, also, the second thing we wanted to ask you, and you already answered it in what you've already said, you talked about where our rights come from. And we work with American Right to Life here at Bob and Yurt Live, and they've been promoting personhood, and it's caught on like wildfire all over the country. And you said our rights come from God. Many people, I was just at DU Law School 2 weeks ago on 2 days in a row talking with the student body there, and we set up a display and we asked, where do rights come from? And a number of the students at University of Denver Law School said the rights come from government or the rights come from the Constitution.
But well, that just shows you the fallacy of what they're teaching in law schools. The Constitution is very plain. The Declaration of Independence is very plain. In fact, most law schools don't teach the relationship between the Declaration and the Constitution.
Right.
And therefore, people are confused. But even in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights was added after the Constitution to preserve the rights that God gave us. In fact, if you read the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Well, if the people had rights before the government got their hands in it, where did they get them from?
Where did they get them from? That's right. So if the people have rights, just because the Constitution didn't list them doesn't mean that the government would have the authority to deprive those people of those rights.
Because they're given of God. And that's what Thomas Jefferson said when he said what has been called the American Dream. We hold these truths to be self-evident, something that everybody should see, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, Jefferson didn't stop there. He went on to say that to secure these rights, not to give them to you, but to secure them, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
So that to secure the rights that we already have,
right,
that is why governments exist. And in fact, God authorized
right.
government, governmental authority. Go way back to the book of Genesis. And
exactly.
Chapter 9 is considered by theologians to be the dispensation of human government, where God gave the authority to execute murderers, convicted
right.
murderers. But so, Judge, when the Constitution secures these rights, then therefore, obviously, the rights don't come from the Constitution. And in fact, some of the students, I'm thankful to say, even at the University of Denver, DU Law School, some of the students answered this way. They said, our rights come from God.
Right.
And when another student said, no, they come from the government, then the students were arguing back and forth, and the other said, well, then they're not rights, are they? They're not rights if the government could decide what you have that's inalienable to you. It's not a right.
Well, if it's inalienable, it can't be taken, it can't be given. You can't give up historically and legally.
Inalienable.
Biblically, but you couldn't give up your life. You couldn't commit suicide because it was against the law.
Right.
It's something inalienable.
For example, if a Hollywood producer wanted to pay somebody $50,000 to go to his poor wife and kids, if he could use him in a car crash and kill him, that is against the law because when they spoke 200 years ago, they said unalienable. The right to life was unalienable, meaning it could not be transferred.
Right.
It's non-transferable. So our rights come from God. Well, Judge Roy Moore, I don't know if you've heard this great news. One of the most popular pro-life bloggers in the country is Jill Stanek, jillstanek.com. But she's been writing about the personhood movement. And as of last week, eight states have introduced bills to acknowledge the God-given right to life, the personhood of the unborn child from the moment of fertilization. And Judge Roy Moore, this is historic because last year, Colorado was the first state in 40 years to have a personhood bill on our ballot. Yeah. And we got over 500,000 votes. And now it's gone from one state, Colorado, to eight states that have introduced, six have introduced personhood bills with no exceptions, and two have begun petition drives to get them on the ballot.
Well, I think it's spreading all over the country because it's a matter of truth. You have to, the people that don't understand the right to life movement think it's just, they don't understand it. But you've got to have a fixed point to go back to, a fixed principle on which everything must be based. Life has to be defined, and it was defined in early law. In fact, in Blackstone's commentaries, it was written that life was the immediate gift of God, right, inherent in nature in every individual, and it begins in contemplation of law as soon as the infant stirs its mother's womb. So our forefathers understood that life began in the womb, and where we have erred is that we define it as when the baby comes out. And now, if we can do that, then we can change that definition at any time, and it can be 6 months after the baby's born.
Well,
there are professors who are trying to do that now.
And in fact, that's right. Steven Pinker, for one, yeah, who's the New York Times, seems to have a love affair with him. And at Denver Children's Hospital, Judge Roy Moore, a horrifying story documented by the Denver Post in a five-page article. Denver's Children's Hospital counseled the parents of a four-year-old handicapped boy to euthanize him, to starve him to death. And
my goodness.
And they had a going-away party. They invited a Denver social worker. Family members flew in from around the country, and they stopped feeding little Dylan Walborn. And there's a website, dylanwalborn.com. And it took, according to the Denver Post, and they were there, they documented, it took 21 days for this four-year-old boy to die of starvation. And that was at the Council of Denver's Children's Hospital. So when you say that if it's not at a certain point, it could be at any point, you're right. We have a child euthanasia movement in America similar to what they have in Europe.
That's terrible.
So the beginning of human rights, they don't come from the hospital or the delivery doctor. They don't come from the government. They come from God.
Right.
It's obviously true. And it's at the moment that that baby comes into existence. So that would typically be conception, right, or fertilization?
Yeah, fertilization. And I think that, it's not just life. It's the liberty that everybody, even liberals, say they don't want people telling them what to believe about God. Well, that's exactly what our forefathers termed liberty of conscience, and it was given of God. In other words, that's not for man to do. Mm. That is between that individual and God. They should appreciate the fact that government can't tell them what to believe. Mm. But they ought to recognize that that source comes from something, and it comes from God.
Yeah.
And they don't do that.
So he is our creator. And if we go all the way back, say the Hippocratic Oath, just go back 2,500 years, Hippocrates, in the oath that for centuries doctors took, but now our medical schools have changed it, they left out one line where Hippocrates put in, I will not procure an abortifacient.
Yeah.
I will not participate in an abortion. They've removed that. But if we go back 1,000 years, even before Hippocrates, Moses put in Exodus chapter 21 from God himself that that baby is valued as a person. And if that baby is killed in a crime, it's a capital crime. That baby, killing the baby in the womb is like killing a capital crime. So when a couple centuries ago, when they talked about the baby quickening in the womb, like they could feel the baby stir, they didn't have genetics like we do. They couldn't see the egg and the sperm uniting in that explosion of life. But now we know, and there's no excuse for us.
Right.
Well, Judge Roy Moore, I want to thank you for your time.
Oh, you're surely welcome, Bob, and it's been wonderful to be with you.
Thank you so much. And we'll keep the audience informed on Judge Roy Moore and if and when he makes that announcement. Thank you, Judge. And now, wow, the fertility institutes in California, they've just announced not only do they do sex selection for parents, but now they've begun offering screening for eye color and hair color. And you know what that means? Somebody wants a blonde-haired, blue-eyed child, then these doctors in Los Angeles will kill the dark-skinned children. And they'll do vice versa, too. They're equal opportunity child killers, like Planned Parenthood. Now, Planned Parenthood sets up in inner cities. That's their routine. Their founder, Margaret Sanger, was a racist. And she described the handicapped, the blind, the deaf, the dumb, the mute, and the lame as, quote, the dead weight of human waste. And you can see that at your local library or just go to Google Books. In fact, if you go to our website, kgov.com, and search for dead weight, and we link to books.google.com, and you could see it on the very page that Google scanned in, you could see Margaret Sanger's quote, where she lists all the handicapped people in New York State. She was writing about New York State, and she wrote of the blind, the deaf, the dumb, the mute, and the lame. And she talked about the money that was wasted on these people, and she said that they are the dead weight of human waste. And Planned Parenthood to this day honors Margaret Sanger. They give out the Maggie Award, their annual Maggie Award. Eugenics, the war against children that is so common. At Denver Bible Church, we had visitors who've been missionaries in France and Belgium for 15 years. And they talked about the dearth of children and marriage in Europe. It's a war against children. But the gospel of Jesus Christ exposes the evil. Hey, this is Bob Benyard reminding you to do right and Maranatha, what a great school.